Next case for argument, United States v. Turner. Mr. Mullen.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Derek Muller on behalf of Joel Turner. The sentencing court lacked clear guidance when it sentenced Joel Turner regarding whether or not it could consider unwarranted disparities between co-defendants under 3553A6. And this court should remand it so that the court may properly consider the unwarranted disparities that it acknowledged existed. Additionally, the sentencing court clearly erred by reaching factual conclusions that it rejected.
But I thought he was sentenced as a career offender.
He was, Your Honor.
So why are the, you know, 200 grams essential and the Buckby house?
Yes. Well, what that did is that it increased his initial advisory sentencing guidelines range by 40%.
But he was sentenced under the career offender statute,
wasn't
he? That's correct.
But one of the factors that Turner argued before the sentencing court was that it was an unreasonably large sentence and that it did not properly reflect the seriousness of the crime in this case, and that career offender status was not appropriate for him in light of the relatively minor offense in this case, that it was inappropriate.
Relatively minor? Why do you call it relatively minor?
Well, because the advisory sentencing guidelines range would have put him at 84 to 105 months.
That doesn't sound like a trivial crime.
Well, I mean, relatively speaking, in regards to a 240-month sentence, which is what he received, that it tripled his sentence.
I don't understand that tripling sentence business. I mean, a career offender, it always, obviously, is a longer sentence than the constituent crimes that...
Right? That's absolutely correct, Your Honor. But a district court has the discretion, when it sees a career offender, to consider the entire circumstances of the offense, including the originally calculated guidelines range. And that if someone has an originally calculated guidelines range that's much lower than perhaps the original one, it would show that there's a significant gap between the crime charged and the career offender status.
Well, that's the intention, that a career offender is going to be punished more severely than someone who just committed the current crime.
That's
right?
True, Your Honor.
So is there some rule of thumb about what kind of ratio should trigger district judges' concern?
No, Your Honor, but that it's important to get the guidelines range correct originally before we put on the career offender status so the sentencing court can properly take into account all of the considerations that might apply to a career offender. So while career offender status certainly trumps the original guidelines range, the sentencing court must originally calculate the guidelines range correctly so that it may reach a correct conclusion about whether or not career offender status in this case is appropriate in an individualized and determined manner. Regarding the unwarranted...
Also, regarding the 200 grams, so don't you have to make a distinction between actual and foreseeable sales? So he's part of a conspiracy. It's back in January. And he's arrested, you know, sort of midway in January, and therefore he doesn't participate in sales from them to the end of the month. But he's part of the conspiracy. It's foreseeable to him. His participation is interrupted by the arrest, but he's liable for all the foreseeable consequences of the conspiracy to which he belonged.
Well, the sentencing court did not hold him responsible for anything after he was arrested.
Well, it should have, right? Look, the rule is you're liable as a conspirator, you're liable for the foreseeable acts of the conspiracy until you withdraw. But being arrested is not withdrawal. You know, it has to be some voluntary withdrawal. You confess to the government, something like that.
I believe that the government essentially does not contest, at least, that it was inappropriate to the government does not contest that he should have been responsible for anything after January 18th. And at least in regards to sentencing, the sentencing court found it inappropriate to consider any amounts after January 18th. whether or not it's...
We'll have to straighten out the district court about that, right? So you can have your client resentenced, maybe get a longer sentence this time.
He was sentenced to the statutory maximum, Your Honor, so...
Oh, okay.
Regarding the unwarranted sentencing disparities, I'm filing a 28J motion today, actually, because 2 weeks ago the Seventh Circuit has clarified that under 3553A6, a sentencing court can consider the unwarranted disparities between co-defendants. And in this case, the sentencing court acknowledged that there are unwarranted disparities, even in spite of the fact that he was a career offender.
Although wasn't that kind of a misspeaking on his part? Because then he went down through the various co-defendants and said, well, this none of these others were career offenders and so forth, and your guy is different than the rest of them. So while he did say unwarranted disparity, he explains the disparity immediately below that, doesn't he?
I'm not so sure that it would be necessarily misspeaking. I mean, he could have said warranted disparities or just disparities, yeah. Period. And then he goes on to say that he didn't have the authority to do so under Seventh Circuit precedent. He made it very clear. And then he sort of just tops it off with something along the lines of, well, he's a career offender and doesn't really seem to address the 3553A factors.
By being a career offender, that does make the sentencing dynamics different for him than it does for the others.
Absolutely. But that does not permit the sentencing court to ignore the 3553A factors. That while different defendants certainly are different, that there may still be unwarranted disparities even between a career offender and all the others who are sentenced.
Isn't it required that the career offender on a drug distribution charge be sentenced at or near the maximum sentence?
I believe we cite contrary.
You cite Liddell, L-I-D-D-E-L.
Yes.
So your argument is totally reliant on Liddell in that regard?
Well, not totally, Your Honor. That there's certainly a policy statement that career offenders are to be sentenced at or near, but there is nothing required or mandatory in that regard.
In your chart on page 24 of your brief, are all of those career offenders?
None of them are career offenders.
Except Turner.
What?
Except your guy. Except Turner.
Yes,
right?
That's correct.
And
so why do you say they're just, why, I'm really just following up on Judge Dinda's question. How then are they comparable to him if he's the only career offender in the list?
Well, first I would seize on the sentencing court statement that there are unwarranted disparities. But then I would go on to say that he has committed two other previous offenses when he was 18 years old, and that now he's being held responsible for a much smaller amount.
Now you're quarreling with the career offender statute.
Well, not with the statute, Your Honor. I mean, the statute puts him...
You don't think it should apply to 18-year-olds.
Well, it's not that either.
Well, that's what you're saying. Why'd you mention his age?
Because in regards to considering someone who is a career offender, a sentencing court may depart or may vary on that basis if it finds appropriate under the 3553A factors. And that sometimes, I mean, in this case, the advisory sentencing guidelines range for the career offender was 262 to 327 months. Whereas the statutory maximum is 240 months. It's essentially a one-size-fits-all for the career offender status, just putting him up well above any statutory maximum.
So. Mm-hmm.
With that, we would ask that the sentence be vacated and remanded for resentencing.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Beller. Mr. Carner?
Good morning. May it please the Court. My name is Mark Carner. I'm an assistant U.S. attorney in the Western Division of the Northern District of Illinois, and I was also the assigned prosecutor at the sentencing hearing in this case. The first issue I'll address is the issue concerning the disparity between the defendant's and co-defendant's statements. It's our view that the district court properly considered the disparity between the co-defendant's statements and did, in fact, misspeak when he used the term unwarranted to describe those disparities. We've quoted the district court's comments on this issue on page 16 of our brief, and I won't bother repeating that here, other than to say, taken into context, the district court clearly considered, as the Gall Court said it's proper for the district court to consider, the things in the background of Joel Turner, Jr., that distinguished him from his co-defendants that supported the court's sentence, specifically the fact that he is a career offender, that three of the seven defendants who were sentenced, given more lenient sentences than him, cooperated, and he wasn't in a position to cooperate because of a pending murder charge. The court went on later in the sentencing hearing to discuss the fact that, or to find that the defendant was an essential component of an extensive drug conspiracy, and that he was one of the co-conspirators who used a gun during the course of this conspiracy. So the court did consider it and properly imposed a reasonable sentence.
Was this defendant facing a murder charge at the time he got arrested on this case?
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor. Okay. Judge, concerning the drug quantity, there was sufficient proof to show that the defendant became a member of the conspiracy in January 2005. That's supported by the testimony of cooperator Ambrose Jones and the pre-sentence report entry on page 21 that described his arrest on January 18, 2005. The court extended a very conservative analysis of the amount of heroin that was reasonably foreseeable as being distributed by the conspiracy, and I agree with Your Honor that the court could have lawfully found him responsible for the amounts that were distributed while he was incarcerated, but out of an abundance of caution, exercising its discretion to the defendant's benefit, it found that the defendant was responsible for more than 700 but less than 1,000 grams of heroin. So unless there's any questions from the panel, I'd respectfully request that this court affirm the district court's sentence.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Carter. Mr. Mueller? Further?
I'll just stand on my brief. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. And thank you, Mr. Mueller, for accepting the appointment and for your efforts on vigorous efforts on behalf of the client. We thank Mr. Carter as well. And the court will...